Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My returning guest tonight is author, artist, illustrator, Peter Cooper, and we're continuing our conversation about his new book, Insectopolis, A Natural History. Peter, welcome back to the show. It is a deep pleasure to talk to you about Insectopolis again. I
Thank you.
Just literally, just before we speak right now, I was recommending that book to a ornithologist who also is passionate about dragonflies.
Bring in the ornithologist.
Yeah, bring him on. Go for the ornithology market. Before we get into it.
Huge market.
Before we get into it, well, it's larger than the dragonfly people market. So, Gregor Samsa, when he transformed into an insect, in your mind, what was that insect?
Well, I went for something that was beetle-like.
But in the actual book, does he say beetle?
No, he says, I think there's different translations, and one of them is vermin. And it's all very, that part of it is vague enough, happily, and I realized pretty early on that I could not draw the head of an insect and have it be something you'd relate to. And so I came up with an actual sort of, the head of a person that you could see a face, and that was, I think, hugely important. I'm sure my enthusiasm for entomology, you know, modified my relationship to Gregor already, and I already was loving him, kind of. But Nabokov made the observation that the description of Gregor was that when he became an insect was that he had this kind of hard shell body.
Yeah.
Which suggested that he was a beetle, and what Gregor Samsa didn't realize was that under that hard shell was wings, and he could have flown away.
Wow.
And it was just one of those great, great literary observations.
It really was, because it really changes my entire feeling about the story.
Exactly. I mean, you know, this whole time he felt he was trapped, but he had wings. That's a great metaphor.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That literally, honestly changes my thinking about the story. Although I don't know if that was his intention, though. And when you say vermin, when you think about vermin, it could have been something like a louse.
Louse. Something, but the louses don't have the hard, the description of his back, you know, he had this hard, kind of hard, rounded back that, you know, made it difficult for him to get under furniture and things. That changed the dynamic of what kind of insect it would be.
Wow.
But I love that. When I read that pretty recently, that Nabokov had made that observation. He taught the metamorphosis at Cornell, and so he was deep into that, and that was really a great discovery.
First of all, that's a great segue, because Nabokov is in Insectopolis. The amazing thing about this book, among the many, the more I read this and reread this and show it to other people, it's such a unique thing that you've done in this book. And we talked about that in the first interview. But there are people in your book, but they're people in the weirdest forms. They're not there in the real sense of the word. Like, let's take Nabokov. And other people, there's talking statues, there's ghosts. It's an amazing variety of human presences without being actual human.
I was just trying to, in some cases, change it up.
Yeah.
In some respects, it was, you know, having them appear as ghosts was really, that was a discovery I made at the beginning of the book when I realized that, humans are gone. And that this is going to be looking at the past in a way where I'd enter it through them existing, but just as apparitions. And that was then, how do I demonstrate that? And I kept changing it up because some of it is I just didn't want to repeat myself in each chapter with how to show them, and it made for a really interesting way to enter it. But in the case of Nabokov, was looking at a room that I had photographed in the library, because it all takes place in the New York Public Library. And there were these three busts sitting on top of a file cabinet. And I just noticed one of them kind of looked like him. And it solved a huge problem for me, because both the idea of him walking around in his shorts or whatever, you know, photo reference I had for him, I was just like, I'm just going to not get that right. I just feel somehow it won't, it's going to look goofy. And then not only did I get rid of the lower part of his body, but of course he has a nameplate on. So as he's floating around, you're constantly being reminded that's Nabokov. And these are, you know, his birth and death dates, which are attached to his tummy.
It's amazing the way he comes off in Insectopolis too, because you bring up all his slights of other writers.
It's very enjoyable.
I never knew that about Nabokov. See, I learned a lot about insects and you know, entomology and stuff like that from your book. But I learned a lot about other people, and he was just an amazing person. He really hated every other writer except himself.
He was. He had very many strong opinions. And that, what's great is with somebody, well, a number of the people, there are interviews with him, and so that I could run through these interviews, and then other writers discussing him and reading his own work and getting this sort of amalgam of all his perspectives. But lots of it is just, you know, an interview where he's sitting there putting down these different writers and who he finds disgusting and and belittling.
Not a big fan of Hemingway.
You know, he was a bitchy guy for sure. It's really,
seriously.
No problem just, you know, coming out and he had very strong opinions and he expressed them.
Well, he had these one-liners for every major writer, like Hemingway and stuff like that. It was just incredible.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, wow. You really wonder, like, what it would have been like to, like, meet him.
Daunting.
Right, yeah. It's like, I don't really want to spend a lot of time with him. Other people that go through your story are very different. Rachel Carlson and Margaret Collins are sort of teamed up, and talk about that. I can't believe that there are people who don't know who Rachel Carlson it was, but there are tons of people that don't know who she was. And Margaret Collins is even worse.
Yeah, part of it, I was looking for the people who would be not as well known. I mean, Rachel Carlson is, you know, she's in the pantheon, and, you know, certainly plenty of people will say, you know, she's the mother of the ecology, the environmental movement, because she wrote this incredible book, Silent Spring, that gave pointed at the fact that we were overusing pesticides, and hand in glove, government and industry were just spending millions and millions on DDT and spraying it around, and had been spraying it for decades, and it was. Just they were sweeping out of the way the idea that this was endangering in any way. And a friend of Carson's noted that different animals were dying around where the spraying was going, because they do flyovers and spray across fields, but then go over towns. And there's footage of these trucks going by with DDT spraying children, and the kids are running behind the truck, and they're in a cloud of DDT.
Well, there's that in Insectopolis. There's that ad that says DDT is good for me.
Yeah,
is that real?
That's a real ad.
Oh my God!
You don't have to go too far to find strange realities. And there's footage in the book. I also have the so-called quote unquote scientist who's saying, like, Rachel Carson is, you know, trying to send us back to the dark ages by not doing this. And by the way, that anger at Rachel Carson goes right up to more recent times.
I know.
I was finding videos where they're saying, you know, because of her, we're not getting rid of malaria, and millions of people died because of Rachel Carson's, you know, like having modified the industry who wants to use all these insecticides. And the industry is still pushing back on her on these ideas, and they basically just took DDT. I mean, it wasn't until the 70s that DDT was actually banned in the U.S., but it's just they just took it and sold it overseas. And so it's not like there weren't some uses for uses for pesticides, but it's the way they use them and the quantity they use them and the disregard for the food chain not recognizing that if you kill off all the mosquitoes, which is still being discussed, like how to and mosquitoes, then there's all the other animals that depend on them as a food source, for example. And also, it's a very small percentage of them that actually carry malaria and can transfer that. And so it's females only. So it's the attitude towards nature, which I found this footage of this scientist hired by the company to just basically say, man has found the ability to conquer nature, and that, you know, basically this woman and her silly ideas are Stone Age.
Yeah. That's scary. Actually, there's a whole section in Insectopolis about mosquitoes and their relationship to human civilization, which is it always gets back to the relationship in your book between these insects and humans. Now, Rachel Carlson is one thing, and I grew up I was born in the 50s, so I grew up through the DDT thing, and all the thing about the eggshells that became so fragile,
right? Yeah,
a hawk sat on them, they broke.
Right.
It was a reality. I mean, it was incredible. Now, the other person that's you have this sort of interesting pairing, Margaret Collins, not as well known to the general public as Rachel Carlson is. Who was she?
She was the first Black woman to get a PhD in entomology, and her area was termites.
Wow.
And she had to, and she was coming up in the 50s, she had to deal with not only sexism, but, you know, racism, since she was Black. And she put portion of her life she put into civil rights, and was, you know, on FBI lists. Jeez. And she had trouble moving up at one university, and so she ended up in Tallahassee, and she was she became the head of the department. I mean, she was brilliant. She was a prodigy, and I think she graduated high school at 15, and was, you know, she just remarkable woman. But she had to jump through all these hoops in order to do her work. But she managed to do that, and was, you know, just, you know, one of these remarkable people that is, she's known among the people that know, but not in the general public.
No.
And another entomologist like that is Charles Henry Turner.
Oh, yeah.
Who was first Black male who got his PhD, and he was essentially put in the position of, he could be a high school teacher. He couldn't find work. He had no backup, no assistance, and then he did all this research and made all these amazing discoveries. And so I was looking in the book to find the people who were less known. I still touch on E.O. Wilson, who's written many books and is pretty.
I got to interview him decades ago.
Lucky you! I really, that's one of the big.
He was amazing. He was local here in Massachusetts, and so we would do bio blitzes. There was a bio blitz day, and he'd always show up in Concord, identifying ants. He was an amazing. I mean, your book is populated by this fascinating cast of characters. Like, we're talking back to Rachel Carlson and Margaret Collins, I end up thinking, geez, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing a movie or a play of these two women together and sort of discussing things.
Especially the method I found my way into to, again, change up my approach was to have them start as children. And so you don't know who they are, and then they start growing up. And if I did my job, the kind of most poignant moment is a little bit like Flowers for Algernon, where Margaret Collins goes up to being an adult, and then she starts regressing, as it were. She goes back to being a child. And just that circle and the story she had to tell, and I was quoting her directly on her relationship to nature and all, because she got cancer right when she was, while she was working on writing Silent Spring, and she did not want anybody to know about it because she was afraid that the industry would use the fact that she had cancer as she's a hysterical woman who's, you know, making, who's going after us because she wants to blame us for her cancer. But she managed to get the book finished and then died a few years after it came out, and but had these just incredible insights into life and nature. And she was really into marine biology originally.
Well, The Sea Around Us.
She sort of stumbled it.
Another book that she wrote that was, at that time, it was a really popular book. I mean, it was, it was put out in some brilliantly illustrated with photography editions. I mean, it's incredible that you're bringing these people back. I have to ask you, Peter, what we're talking about Carlson and Collins, that enough would have been a huge story to have done a book on. Yet you have all these other stories in the book. I got the feeling like you'd been holding up all this stuff and then just wham, put it all down on paper.
Well, a lot of it was discovery for me as I went, because I had a handful of people, my sort of general idea for that I put forward to get this fellowship at the New York Public Library back in 2020 was that I was going to do these biographies of entomologists and history of insects. But I was sketched very lightly. And so as I went and as I was reading about different biographies and different entomologists, and then talking to current entomologists who would say, oh, you must do so-and-so. And I was asking the different people that I was speaking to, because I got lots and lots of triple checks on all my information, because I really, I knew I would get the blowback after the book came out if I hadn't gotten it right. So I got very lucky, because I met an entomologist who is into comics. I met him at a comic convention, and then he knew a whole bunch of people. And then as soon as I met one, I could meet another. But the other really fascinating thing was just being able to, I'd read a book on somebody that none of the people in my immediate circle knew, and I would just email their website or find a contact one way or another, and all of them responded to me and were checking my chapters. And that was so I read a book called Silent Earth that was kind of a follow-up to Silent Spring by Dave Goulson, who's in England, and I sent him a chapter that he looked at whatever the expertise was. There's a woman named Erica McAllister. She's also in England at the Natural History Museum there, and she's written two or three books on flies. And I sent her my mosquito chapter, and she told me very distinctly that I was wrong about a bunch of things, and it was another 2 weeks of work to respond to her suggestions, which was actually fantastic. I mean, it was exactly what I was looking for. I wasn't thrown off when I was told that I had gotten something wrong, whereas in another state, I might have been completely shaken by the fact that, oh, now I got that wrong, and now I'm going to have to do all this work. Instead, it was more like, phew, I'm not going to put something down that somebody is going to point at and tell me how wrong I was later. Example, though, was I just happened to read The Invention of Nature by Andrea Wolf on Alexander von Humboldt, and he was not on my list. I don't know why I picked that book up, but then there was tangentially enough. He had made some discoveries of mosquitoes when he was in the Amazon, but he was such a fascinating character, and he was incredibly famous. I mean, one of the most famous people in the world in the 1800s when he died. And he was almost completely forgotten because he was German in World War I. He just basically got written out of American history. But we were going to name – Nevada was going to be named Humboldt, and there's a Humboldt Current and in off the coast, California. And in Mexico, this didn't happen. And so there's Humboldt streets left and right, and wherever he kind of traveled – there were huge parades when he died. In New York, there was 10,000 people marched to celebrate him. But also he got kind of eclipsed by Darwin. And so when I did my biography of von Humboldt, I threw into it a little coupling with Darwin. So it was really nice.
It was also interesting the way that you visually portrayed Humboldt, von Humboldt. It was more of a painterly portrait. Am I thinking about the right person?
Yeah, absolutely.
It was a very sensitive picture, a visual picture of von Humboldt that you put in there. People who are tuning in, first of all, you're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My returning guest tonight is author, artist, and illustrator Peter Cooper. And we're talking about his fascinating new book, Insectopolis, A Natural History, a beautiful graphic treatment of a lot of stuff. I mean, this is the unique thing about Insectopolis is it deals with these issues, not even just fleetingly. I mean, you go into depth. Like a great person who was an artist that you talk about in this book is Maria Sibylla Merian. Mm-hmm. And she has an amazing story, too. I mean, what an incredible story she has about going to Suriname as a woman and painting all these plants and insects and animals. And by the way, what an interesting way to represent the rainforest visually that you had. I love that look that you have, that two-page spread, man.
I was trying to bring the awe that the circumstances would have. I did that also with the dung beetle.
Yeah.
Dung beetle / scarab, same thing, that can navigate by the Milky Way. And at first, when I drew that, I drew it as a smaller panel on a page. And then I looked at it and I was like, to get the sense of the vastness of this, I have like a double page spread of just the beetle looking up at the sky and seeing the Milky Way. And that just the whole crazy idea that the first animal to navigate by the stars was a dung beetle making its way at night, pushing a ball of poop around. And so, you know, there were so many discoveries like that. But with Maria Sibylla Merian, one incredible joy of doing this whole project, getting the project rolling, excuse me, at the library, was they had the original drawings that she did in 1700. They're, you know, hand-colored lithographs, and they have one of the 50 copies of that exists still. And she supported her trip by doing these drawings, and while she was at it, she made this discovery about metamorphosis of insects that people, going back to Socrates, they thought insects popped out of the mud, like when each stage was completely separate and not related, that somehow a butterfly went into the mud, I mean, a caterpillar went into the mud or, you know, disappeared, and then this butterfly somehow appeared. And that, you know, you can understand that when you see like a maggot go into a garbage can and then a fly comes out, they don't look like they're associated at all. So people believe this for, you know, a few thousand years, and she came along and made the discovery by watching from egg to caterpillar and then what plant they were on and recognizing the association between this particular insect needs this particular plant, and then see it come out as a butterfly and make the clear line between each stage. And that people didn't know this clearly. They were just starting to make these discoveries. And because she was a woman, she also, some of this was pushed back against until, you know, 100 years later, and Darwin would come along and people would go, I see, yes, what she said, you know, 100 years earlier. So, you know, there was all these stumbling blocks, but she also, it was age 52 that she, with her daughter, went to Suriname. She, like, divorced her husband, and she went off on this trip, and that just was unheard of. Just these, you know, trailblazing people who were going against the norms, societal norms. Alexander von Humboldt was gay. And he was, he had to, as famous as he was, and he was like really handsome, and that I saw a documentary or a biopic on him where they were just talking, women were throwing themselves at him. They sort of didn't allude to the fact that he wasn't interested, but yeah, it was, you know, he was like this fascinating character, and he had to deal with the mores of his time.
We're almost out of time, Peter. And I have so many more questions. That's okay. I'll have to have you back just to talk about your career.
Speed talk.
No, don't. Well, I'll have to have you back just to talk about your career because I do want to get to that. So I want to stick on Insectopolis for the last few minutes. Ants. You draw so many effing ants in this book. And it's funny because when you see that many ants on the page, it's like the way we experience ants. It's like they're all over the place. And ant lore that you bring in is just so hilarious because you bring in the classic ant farm. And I had one when I was a kid, and the inevitable, as it always does, happens. A cat knocked it over. The ants were running all over the house.
And just the drawing of the ant farm and these sort of characters, I was finding that was part of the whole.
Oh, my God. You, you did ants so well in this book.
Well, I actually recently, I have a show right now at the New York Society of Illustrators that will be up until September 20th. And it's pieces of Insectopolis and also a previous book, Ruins, where I have the Monarch's Migration, which sort of got me going in this direction. And I went to this society and lay down and drew ants on the wall with a Sharpie, and they're like streaming along the wall as part of the exhibition. So I may have drawn as many ants as I need to this lifetime, but
I know I think you're anted out.
Yeah, I'm anted out. Yes,
but there's so much great ant lore. There's great ant movies like Them, like Phase Four. All that stuff, by the way, is in the book. I mean, there's great ant stuff.
That was another thing I was actually really wondering about was the whole our relationship to nuclear bomb.
And we're going to have to talk. We're going to have to do part three and talk about that because we're completely out of time.
Okay.
My returning guest tonight, and man, we could go at this for hours. Author, artist, and illustrator Peter Cooper, and we're talking about his new book. I recommend it highly. Insectopolis, A Natural History. Trust me, it'll be like no other book that you have read, and it's a visual treat, too. Peter, it's a pleasure.
Thank you for having me a second time. Look forward to the third.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.